talking to you about a project that we've been doing in the state of West Virginia. We're going to be looking at literally universal coverage and commercial insurance. I'd like to acknowledge the funders, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, State Coverage Initiatives, and the West Virginia Healthcare Authority. West Virginia's been trying to look at the problem of the uninsured for many, many years now, and they did it in 93, they put it aside for the Clinton plan, and then they came back to it again when the dollars began flowing again through RWJ, through the HRSA state planning grants, through other vehicles trying to help states address problems of the uninsured. So the state has been extraordinarily lucky in bringing in a lot of external dollars. One of those is a state coverage initiative grant. They did a survey in 2001 of 16,000 households across the state of West Virginia, which is huge, given we're 1.8 million people, to kind of look at what was the size of the problem. Who are these uninsured? Who do they work for? How do we get a handle on it? What kind of approach? They then went for a state coverage initiative demonstration grant to put together some kind of program, product, initiative to begin to try to address some of the uninsured within the state. At about the same time this is happening, you started seeing the state planning grants. So West Virginia wasn't in the first phase of awardees, but it was in the second phase. And so they got one of these new grants. The governor, this was a governor-driven initiative, invited a whole host of stakeholders from around the state to participate on what they call the Health Advisory Council to kind of look at the data that came out of the survey, to work with another parallel group from the State Coverage Initiative to really kind of lay out just what would this product look like, because two of the things that were given to the Health Advisory Committee as kind of guidance for what they were to do and what they were not to do is, first, do no harm. That had nothing to do with patients, for any of you who might be confused by that. It was do no harm to the existing health insurance industry. And then try and cover people, but build within the existing structure. So employer-based health insurance were some of the constraints within which you worked. And the third one, which you'll absolutely love, was the state will not come up with a dime. So the politics of policy making, these are the constraints within which this body was working to try and cover the uninsured. So you put together the state coverage initiative and the state planning grant, and you came up with the West Virginia Small Business Plan, the eligibility for which was you had to have two, because one person really isn't an employer, 2 to 50 employees. You had to have been in business for 12 months. They didn't want people just kind of opening their doors and getting health insurance. That you have not offered health insurance for the previous 12 months. I told you this was a governor-invited health advisory council, and that there was a do-no-harm clause. Insurance was a major representative on that committee. So you see the look-back provision that was there automatically, so that small businesses would not just drop whatever coverage they had to take advantage of something that might cost less. The argument was we want to cover new people. You had to have 75% of all eligible employees sign up. So if you only covered your full-time employees, 75% of those. You could have opt-outs if your spouse had insurance and you were covered through that. That would be legit and it lessened the denominator. And the employer had to pony up at least 50% of the individual premium. And I'm running ahead of my notes, which is what I tend to do. In additional information about the small business plan, was it came on the market in fall of 2004. Now, it required some state legislation, some state rules, in order to even be offered, because they wanted to take advantage of the discounted reimbursement rates that the Public Employee Insurance Agency paid. That was the vehicle by which they got the premium amounts down. They went with the discounted fares, but you had to get that through the legislature first. So that was passed. It came on the market in 2004. All insurers in West Virginia were eligible to offer this product. Only Mountain State Blue Cross and Blue Shield did. And it did. It had premiums that were about 17 to 22% lower initially. What was required by the state coverage initiative was that there be an evaluation component, which is absolutely wonderful and essential. And this evaluation includes multi-part focus groups with the agents. This is a private insurance coverage package. Brokers sell these products. surveys with the enrolled businesses and with the enrolled employees. That is going to be the focus of what I'm going to talk about a little bit today. An analysis of claims data to try and look at utilization, to look at pent-up demand, to look at use of preventive services. And then looking at enrollment data. How well did we do in beginning to cover the number of uninsured and where they lived? And that is my phone. If someone wants to go in and just turn it off, I apologize. That is embarrassing. Okay. The mail surveys, the evaluation questions quickly were looking who enrolled, what kinds of businesses, what were their sizes, what were the characteristics of them, when was the last time they'd offer health insurance that they ever had, and then employee characteristics. What was their previous health insurance status? How long had they been uninsured? What type of coverage were they buying into, individual, family? And what do enrollees like or dislike about the plan? So the results, as of today, September 2007, close enough, we had 314 small businesses enrolled. Now we've got thousands of small businesses. Those are the largest. We put them all together and it's one huge employer. But it's thousands of little providers. And then 998 contracts. We're talking about wanting to cover 230,000 people. So this is looking today, 2 years later, after it's actually been on the market and been being marketed. The employer survey, it went out to all of the employees who were enrolled from the time that it opened through July. So we were looking like an 18-month window, not as much time as we had here. And in employers, I think, and I apologize, I should have that, it's something like 200 employers were involved and 116 respondents for about a 45% response rate. Of those, 92% were still enrolled at the time of the survey. Some of them had actually dropped out. So some had signed up early in 2005, and others had signed up because it's a rolling sign-on. You know, you go to your broker, you learn about it, you get involved in it, you see what's going on. You can see the median number of employees is 5. So you really are getting at, you know, the smallest. 50% of those who were responding to the survey were fewer than 5 employees, and 50% more, and it maxes out at 50. The average size was 7. So you are looking at small businesses, and this is good. 75% were full-time employees, 25% part-time. The reasons they enrolled, no surprises. The benefits are important to get workers. They were really looking at recruitment and retention issues of workers. This was a big deal. And the fact that the cost was about right was an extra additional penny. The reasons that they disenrolled, you can see, their business wasn't as profitable, so they even had trouble covering these costs. And I will be honest, these insurance premiums, although they were 17 to 22% below the market, it's still dealing with groups of folks. So if you're a high-risk group, smaller with older employees and everything else, your premiums are up, maybe on the average of $300 a month, which is pretty pricey as far as I'm concerned, but that would go up depending on what group you were in. And you'll see it actually went up in other places as well. So the cost of premiums and not happy with benefits. Other kinds of reasons they gave for being dissatisfied were they'd been told that claims would, you know, that the insurance would cover certain services, and they got there and discovered that it really wasn't covered. No surprises here. The premiums were raised on a regular basis. That was a real serious thing. Oh, okay, let me roll right along. Okay, you can see 27% dissatisfied with the small business plan. Premiums too high, copays, all cost related. So let's look at the employees very, very quickly. You can see about 50% of these are from 45 to age 64. That's the group in here. And then another 20 or so percent from age 25 to 34. So the very youngest, the kind of folks you hope you get out when you get to small employers, you're not really seeing those. More males than females tied to jobs. 70% married. That says a lot about West Virginia. About 30% education. You're looking at a less educated population to start with. Under a third were high school graduate or less. And, all right, and of those, what did they cover? About 60% covered themselves. That's pretty much what they could afford. Another 18% went for the whole family, individual plus children, 9 plus 3. All right, what was their insurance status before? 78% of these employers had never offered health insurance before, but 56.8% of these employees had health insurance before they were offered the West Virginia State Business Plan. And that's probably a function of their spouse was covered. Maybe in some cases they were really biting the bullet and doing individual coverage. Right, their satisfaction. Very satisfied, about 57%, and very unsatisfied. Any ideas? Obviously, this is satisfaction with cost. Of course, they're very dissatisfied because it was really pricey, and they were expected to come up with 50% of this premium. Plus, they had copay amounts and deductibles, and the deductibles were not small. All right, with benefits, the dissatisfaction drops a little. So it's close to 70% are satisfied with the benefits, and about 21% are dissatisfied with the benefits. The dissatisfaction with benefits is, again, the services that it doesn't cover. They found it too much trouble, too complicated to use, that the providers didn't accept the product. Goes back to the basic issue. Just having a card, universal health insurance, gets you a card. It doesn't guarantee that you receive care. And you can see with costs, I'm not going to belabor that point. That's pretty clear. Summary and conclusion. All right. The small business plan did seem to motivate some employers to sign up. They found out about it in lots of different ways. I'm not talking to you about the focus groups, but I'm going to say just a little bit about that. Not all brokers really sold this product. They already took a 50% cut in their commission in order to offer this product for the Blues. They see it as part of their whole stable of offerings, and they feel it's good to get people in the door. What this evaluation can't tell us, and we tried to see if we could get at it, was how many people came in the door because they'd heard about the small business plan, determined that either it was too pricey or didn't cover exactly what they wanted, and signed up for another Blue Cross and Blue Shield product. That still gets people insured. So the big question is, costs are still a problem. Is our goal to get small businesses to provide health insurance for their employees? And a lot of these small businesses do not, because it is extraordinarily expensive. Many get on board and drop it as the premiums are raised. Or are we trying to get at the uninsured population? Because as you saw, over half of these employees who signed up had previously had health insurance. So the politics of policy, particularly with states and looking at insurance carriers, is there are a lot of different issues with private insurers. I don't know if other insurers are like Blue Cross and Blue Shield, that at each of your anniversary dates with a plan, that you're automatically bumped up to the next tier, meaning your premiums automatically go up whether your group has used services or not. Now, what we found out after the fact is that employers can go back to their brokers and appeal, saying we didn't use the service, there's no justification for raising our rates, and they can be brought back to the original tier they came in on. But a lot of that, again, depends on the broker of providing that information and on the employer in actually asking the question in the first place. So this truly is something that seems to be sort of dumped on the employer as well as the employee. What is interesting to me as an evaluator is that within the last 6 months, and the Robert Wood Johnson dollars are gone at the end of December, we have seen so much promotion for this program on public radio, very interesting, at West Virginia University football games, very interesting, because part of, I guess in a way, where people are looking at small business plan are for another kind of small business that many of us may be familiar with, physician offices, attorney's offices. Most of these are small employers. They employ from 2 to 50, and they're in a much better situation to be able to afford premiums and potentially lower cost premiums because of various higher socioeconomic status indicators. So I'm going to shush. Oh, the next steps, we're doing a round two of panels. We've done one round of panels with a small group of employers who responded before and of employees. That's underway. We'll finish that data collection. Actually, it should be finished now while I'm here. And the claims data is currently being analyzed to provide more information to policymakers on whether or not there is this phenomena of pent-up demand. Are these people more chronically ill, or what the story is? And I will hush and thank you.
Thank you.